and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast presented by Xfinity. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing just after midnight on, Wednesday morning. I legit didn't know. I had to really calculate it.
We're at that point of the playoffs.
Yeah. Joining us from Boston, Massachusetts, where he attended game one of the Cleveland Cavaliers versus Boston Celtics on Tuesday nights, Tim Buntemps.
I sat through a really boring game today. I would normally not be super excited to talk about it, but I don't have to do this pod with Tim McMahon, so I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, we're relegating McMahon to his post-game duties in Oklahoma City, and he can enjoy I-35. Joining us, however, from Texas, will be an honorary Texan of the pod, from San Antonio, is Andrew Lopez. What's up, Lopez?
I was excited to be able to join you guys tonight. I have my sleep mask that I just took off because I was it's very, very late. And like my guy Victor wants to do, I gotta get my rest. So feel like I was trying to just rest up to so I knew I could give you guys my best tonight.
Yeah, you had
congrats, Andrew Lopez on the one-on-one. Big one-on-one this week.
Big one-on-one with Victor, who was named unanimous MVP. Somehow,
Yannis rookie of the year. Let's settle down.
I don't know. Brian's looking a few years into the future here.
I was like, wait a minute. I say MVP.
That is a Freudian slip, as Jackson says. That was a very Freudian slip.
99 votes out of 99. I don't know why there weren't 100. Somebody didn't turn in their ballot, Buntemps.
I assume someone didn't turn in a ballot. That would be my guess, just based off the fact that they always ask 100.
Yeah. Maybe it was McMahon. So he just all that complaining and he never looked in his email.
Maybe.
Yeah. So we'll talk about Lopez sit down with Wembanyama, which he had earlier this week, and some other stuff going on in the NBA. First, though, let's start with, I don't even know if I want to say the game of the night. It was not a great night in the NBA playoffs. Not a good night for the Dallas Mavericks, they went through a run in the third quarter of this game. And I'm not sure if they actually caught the Thunder, or they got within 1 point, and then the Thunder put the hammer down in the midway through the third quarter and basically cruised the rest of the way. They looked very impressive in this game, top to bottom. They got great contributions up and down their lineup, got a couple of guys coming off the bench who really gave their starter support. They didn't even like shoot the ball tremendously overall, but they were awesome from 3-point range in the second half. Shea had 29 points in this game with 9 rebounds and 9 assists, 2 blocks. Obviously, he played pretty good. He started off the last series against New Orleans, which you were on, Lopez, a little sluggish, but he's been playing well ever since, and this was a good one. And you watched the Thunder in that last series, go with a sweep. They built momentum. They had a layoff. They had the biggest layoff of anybody. I think it was maybe like 8 or 9 days. They showed no signs whatsoever of really feeling any hangover. They were ahead for most of the first half and most of the second half, Lopez. What do you think of them really coming into this series and what you saw here in game one?
Well, coming into the series, I mean, this was a team who, you talk about rest, I think they played, because of the schedule, 4 games in 22 or 23 days, it felt like. They were a week, but I think it was a week last, it was last Tuesday when they finished off the sweep against the Pels. But I tell you what, watching them in that series, being around them a couple days in practice, it's a very impressive group considering how young they are. And I think this still holds true after tonight. They've only had 2 points in this series by a player older, a 26 or older. Everything else has come from players 25 or younger.
In the last series.
In the playoffs.
Playoffs. Yeah. So
Gordon Hayward has 2 points.
Gordon did not score tonight. So I think that
holds. I think it was. Is it Gordon or Kenrich? It's one of those two.
Kendrick Williams did not score tonight.
Yeah.
So
whichever one it is, they didn't score.
It was one of them in game one. It might have been a Kenny Hustle bucket in game one. But it's very impressive. The job that Mark Daigneault has done with that group to have everybody ready and still be able in the playoffs to go 10 or 11 deep if he wants and still get contributions from those guys. Like we talk about, Kenrich Williams, he's kind of the odd man out right near. There was a couple of times they used him in the Pelican series. We asked him about that when we were, during that first series, and we said, hey, normally guys, teams shorten up their rotations here. And he's like, no, this is what got us here. This is what we're going to continue to go with. And I think you kind of saw how that empowered some guys throughout the season. And now you're getting those contributions at a high level. We saw the plays that Chet Holmgren was making. We saw the plays that Cason Wallace was making. Those guys were like, when you talk to them, it's like, oh man, rookies are making plays in the playoffs. And they have this thing they like to say, they're not rookies anymore. They already played 82 games. So they've gotten this experience throughout the regular season. They've won games. And now that's showing in the playoffs, even with this young of a roster they have.
You mentioned the ability they have to play a lot of different ways, Andrew. And when I saw the Thunder in Philly earlier, so they're on the East Coast later in the season, they were in Philly, I believe. And I asked Mark Daigneault, the guy voted for Coach of the Year, like many of the rest of the voters, did a fantastic job. I asked him about the fact that he's constantly playing a different rotation basically every game. And I was like, look, NBA players like to have very defined ideas of what they're going to do, right? They know when they're coming in, they're when they're coming out, when they're going to get their shots, when they're going to, like, it's a very much a routine oriented league, right? And how do you have all these guys who are willing to and able to play in all these different ways and do all this different stuff and try something else every night? And he gave you what I thought was a pretty fascinating answer, which was, look, when we get in the playoffs, we're going to be trying different stuff all the time. And we don't want to be trying stuff for the first time in the playoffs. We'd rather try it during the regular season, which is a very simple thing to say. It's a much harder thing to live and execute on a daily basis, particularly with a young team. And you look at this game tonight, coming into this series, what did everybody talk about? How are the Thunder going to do on the glass, right? They win the offensive rebounding battle. The Mavericks turn the ball over, which is absolute death against this team. They make up for the fact they don't rebound the ball because they create a ton of turnovers. They turn them all over today. And Jalen Williams struggled in this game. I believe he was 2 for 11 in the first three quarters. Comes out in the fourth quarter, bang, 4 for 4 in the fourth quarter, takes over the game, hits a bunch of shots in a row. The Thunder are making plays all over the place, and it blow the game open at home and win this game going away in game one in dominating fashion. And if you look at what they have done, you look at what Minnesota's done, these young teams have come into these playoffs and made it very clear that they're not, like you said, they're not inexperienced teams. They're not unprepared teams. They are more than ready to take on everything that's coming at them. And like, to me, this was, you know, people have been doubting the Thunder going back to the regular season. Oh, you want to get the Thunder in the first round. You want to match up with them. You want to get them. This game right here, I think, was a very loud and clear statement that the idea that the Thunder are some easy team to get and the preferred team left in the Western Conference has been a very silly notion for people to have.
You mentioned Jalen Williams. J-Dub, the starter Jalen Williams, obviously he's the one who had the 4 for 4. But going back to the previous point, J. Will, the other Jalen Williams who comes off the bench, he was one of those guys in the first round series who – there were multiple games, and I want to say he was the 10th or 11th man in game one. They matched him up with Jonas for, I think, only 4 or 5 minutes in the Pel series.
I'll tell you right
and
here,
now he's
7 minutes, 17 minutes, 10 minutes, 11 minutes, 17 minutes. Those are
and then he comes out tonight, has 11 and 9 tonight. I mean, these, and he's the first guy off the bench tonight. So these guys know their role. They accept it. And I think that's just, you know, it's a joy to watch them actually just go out and play team basketball.
We talked about on the pod the other day about Aaron Wiggins as, you know, a guy that you better learn if you're going to watch the playoffs. He was a cool plus 18 off the bench tonight. 16 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and a block. Coming off the bench is more length on the perimeter. And speaking of the perimeter, the defense that the Thunder are able to play is, you know, it's not the level that the Wolves are playing. And obviously the Wolves are the story of the postseason. We'll talk about them in a few minutes. But their versatility defensively on the perimeter is right there with just about anybody in the league. And Lou Dort was deployed as a primary defender on Luka Doncic, who did not look good. And we'll talk about that in a second. Luka was 3 of 8 with 4 turnovers with Lou Dort as primary defender. They double teamed Luka a bunch. Chet Holmgren, the Mavericks are 5 of 15. This is all stats and information tracking. Mavericks 5 of 15 with blocked 3 times by Chet Holmgren when he was a primary defender. A whole bunch of double teams that they threw at Luka in this game. He was 3 of 11. The Mavericks were 3 of 11 when Luka was double teamed, so he wasn't able to pass out of it. And Bontemps, they had 4 days off coming into this. So, you know, unlike the Cavs had a quick turnaround. The Cavs we played tonight, they had 1 day off. 4 days off and no travel. relatively no travel. They had come from LA. They didn't have to go back to LA because they ended the series, 30-minute flight. And, you know, you would hope, you know, McMahon was telling us Luka was a little bit concerning on the way he was describing that knee last Friday, that he was saying it was going to be an issue with the rest of the season. He had, you know, these 4 days off and he looked sluggish. Sometimes it's just walking, very little push and explosion. It's really shown up in his 3-point shooting. He was 1 of 8, you know, on threes in this game. I believe over the last 5 games, I think he's 8 of 49 on threes. Bontemps, I would almost argue that the most important thing coming out of this, I mean, the Thunder playing well at home is important, but the biggest things for this series right now is just how less than normal Luka looked, and that's a big factor.
Yeah, 5 for 35 over his last 4 games, 8 for 49 over his last 5 games, shooting well under 30% overall for the playoffs so far. And yeah, look, I mean, if Dallas is going to beat Oklahoma City in this series, Luka Doncic has to be the best player on the court, right? He has to be absolutely boss in the game. And he did not in this game in any way, shape, or form. And look, we talked about it the other day. The tricky thing for Dallas coming into this series, despite all the moves that they made, is that they don't really have a lot of clean options to guard Oklahoma City. Like, because you've got Luka and Kyrie out there, in a lot of ways, even though they didn't have Zion healthy, it's a similar problem to what the Pelicans have, just with maybe a little more firepower, right? When you're trying to build around these two guys that, while Luka and Kyrie have had moments where they played better defense, and certainly Kyrie had some really good defensive moments, in particular in the first round, neither one of them is exactly a stopper. And when you're going out there and you're having to try to slow down all these various guys at once, there's a lot of stuff you got to try to maneuver around. And there's only so long they can keep the Thunder down, particularly if they're going to throw the ball around, which you just cannot do against this team. You let them get out in transition with these young legs, they're flying up and down the court, they get easy buckets. It's curtains for you. So yeah, like, look,
these I saw series that before games.
Yes, you did. And look, these series go, like, because they didn't have, this is a real technical thing, but some series move up early, like the Minnesota Denver series, which is why and this is all for different TV purposes for people listening, but that's why that series had 2 games played before Dallas and Oklahoma City played any. But now Dallas and Oklahoma City are playing every other day for 2 weeks. And if you're dealing with a sore knee and you're playing a young, explosive team that, by the way, to your point before, Lopez, has 19 different guys that they can throw at Luka Doncic. Not that all of them are going to be Lu Dort, but they can just keep throwing fresh bodies at you all the time. And if you're Luka and you're Kyrie and you've got to create all this offense against 5, 6, 7 different options that they're throwing at you over 7 games, you're going to naturally wear down. You're going to naturally get tired. And Luka sitting on the bench, they had a shot of him on TNT, taking off his kinesio tape on his knee and just sort of looking at it. And he was limping pretty bad right before he came out in the fourth quarter. Got 48 hours to recover. It's, you know, I'm certainly not writing off the Mavs. I'm not writing off Luka, but that was a concerning game, given that they had the break going into this. And like McMahon talked about it on the last pod, the lift on that step back is the critical thing, as you just said, Brian. And his 3-point shot is not there. And if his 3-point shot is not there, it's going to be very hard for Dallas to win this series.
Yeah, 19 points for Luka, by the way. Jackson points out breaking a streak of 24 consecutive playoff games with at least 20 points.
And by the way, Luka minus 21, team worst in 41 minutes. If Luka's minus 21, you're not going to be winning. And Kyrie, by the way, was minus 15 and 37, so it's not like he was any better. I mean, they got beat. They got beat in, you know, mano a mano with the elite guys. A lot of that came in that fourth quarter when they blew it open. But still, like, you're just not used to seeing Luka being minus 21 in a game.
And of course, great atmosphere in Oklahoma City tonight.
Awesome.
You know,
it was.
Did you cover a game there, a playoff game there before, Andrew? Before this?
No, that was my first time. And I've covered regular season games there. I covered a few of the Victor Chet games there this year, and so those crowds were pretty good. But that crowd for game 1 and 2. It was the barking whenever J-Dub gets something done. Like, it is. So what they did for game 1 and 2, I don't know if they did it for this one. For 1 and 2 against the Pels, they opened gates and half an hour early.
They
let people in for 2 hours, half off concessions, half off alcohol. I mean, they do everything to get it going, but then it's, I mean, there's, they just, it's such a good crowd. Like, it was one of the top atmospheres that I had ever been in, playoffs or not. It was just current battle.
What percentage of the fans are wearing the free shirt that is provided?
100%.
Yeah, I would say 99.8, because they embarrass you if you don't, because they will show you on the big screen the entire pregame. As soon as people are let in the building, we've all been in arenas. We've seen what pregame shows look like, and they're running different videos. They don't do anything except put on your t-shirts graphic, and the crowd will boo you 90 minutes before tip if you don't put your shirt on. And if you're just sitting there, you're just eating your food, they're just going to boo nachos. You out of nowhere until you put the shirt on.
Yeah, it's an amazing. Yeah.
You're eating your half off nachos. You got your half off hot dog, and people are going to boo you until you put the shirt on.
We'll see if I'm back there in a couple of weeks. But being there for Thunder Spurs in 2016, which ended up being Tim Duncan's last game, was played in Oklahoma City, and then being there for Warriors Thunder when obviously the Clay Game 6 game was there. I mean, those are some of the most memorable playoff games I've ever covered, and the crowds are just every game. They're just unbelievable. And you can hear it through the TV. They're just so loud.
On their feet during warmups.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's a great atmosphere.
If you walked around the concourse 45 minutes before tip, lines were just crazy. If you walked on the concourse during intros, you could drive a car around the concourse and not hit anybody, because everybody was in their seat.
Everybody's
like, as soon as the anthem was over, I was like, let me sneak out, go to the bathroom real quick before the game starts. And it was a ghost town because everybody was in their seat for starting lineups. It was insane.
Oklahoma City. It's a college atmosphere.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now, let's revert to the game that you went up there for, Bontemps. I would say predictably, I guess the Cavs hung in there for a while. Donovan Mitchell with another good game. He had 33, but even without Porzingis and even with the days off, the Celtics sort of just handled their business. I don't even think they won by 25. And what letter grade would you give the Celtics performance?
C-, maybe worse.
I would have said C+. I think you're being a little harder than me, but
I mean, they Jaylen Brown played great. Derek White continues this great run he's on. He's now one of five players in NBA postseason history to have at least 20 threes over three consecutive postseason games. If you guys haven't seen the stat, we could do some trivia here. Do you know who the other four players are?
I haven't seen the stat. He was 7-12 tonight, by the way.
I would assume tonight. Steph and Clay
are two of the four. The other two guys are both playing in this year's playoffs.
Kyrie?
Not Kyrie, but Luka? Good guess. Not Luka, also good guess.
Still playing.
One is still playing, one is not.
Donovan?
Donovan is not. Another good guess, but not him. One guy did it in the bubble who's still playing in the playoffs Donovan. Jamal Murray is one.
Okay.
The other guy lost in the first round, had a couple of massive games and then got hurt.
Go ahead.
Damian Lillard is the other one.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
So Derek White is now in the same company with Steph, Clay, Dame, and Jamal Murray. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Not that a guy so. who was known for this kind of production. I mean, shot the three well this year, over 40%.
Look, a couple of years ago in the playoffs, he had moments where he hit a bunch of threes, but he overall really struggled to shoot the ball. And the last couple of years, he's turned into an elite three-point shooter and has become a fantastic two-way player, not just an elite defensive player. So he was great, but Jason Tatum stunk. I mean, he had 18 points on 19 shots, was pretty lackadaisical on defense, was not really engaged. But, like, it didn't matter because this game felt like it was played on November 7th. Like, yeah. There was no energy in the building. The Cavs had very little defensive energy, particularly in the second half.
Now, Jared Allen out for a fourth consecutive game with the rib injury.
But it wasn't even Jared. It's not even about it was perimeter defense. It felt almost like a preseason game. A lot of the game. I mean, part of this is because I was at the Sixers-Knicks series, which was insane. And then I was at the Garden, which I'm sure we'll talk about, game one of Pacers-Knicks, which also was insane because the Knicks seemed to only play insane playoff games. But to go from that to this was just a very hard pivot. And yeah, like Donovan was great, especially early on, kept him in the game. But it's just, you watch this game and you go, yeah, like, Cleveland went 11 for 42 from three. They could have a night where they hit a bunch of threes, but the Celtics went 6 from 22 in three in the first half, and they were up by 10.
It was a decent 3-point shooting night for the Celtics. It wasn't.
Yeah, they ended up at 39%. It ended up being pretty good.
Yeah, but I mean, they have nights where they're even hotter than that, way hotter.
For sure. For sure.
I keep saying that the Cavs are going to have a breakout 3-point game, but they shot 28%. In the Magic series, and they shot even worse in this game.
And here's the thing too, right? So you look at the box score today. So George Niang has basically been excised from the rotation. They're playing Marcus Morris, who can't shoot anymore. He's playing 10 minutes. They're playing Tristan Thompson, 16 minutes. He's obviously not shooting.
Who's never shot.
Caris LeVert, who always kills the Celtics, had a pretty pedestrian game.
Caris LeVert is absolutely in the worst slump of the season for the Cavs.
Well, and he also saved their season in game 7. He had a great stretch in the second quarter, turned the game
around. A few minutes.
And the other guy who turned the game around in that game was Sam Merrill, who they didn't play basically that whole series. They then dust him off and play him in this game. He goes 0 for 4 from 3 in 17 minutes. So, like, they're just not a lot. And Isaac Okoro, who really isn't a very good shooter, he goes 3 for 8 in this game. And early on, I think, was 3 or 4 or 3 for 5. So it's just going to be hard, I think. When you look at it coming into it, you've got Jrue Holiday and Derek White going up against Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland. Probably the single best team equipped to guard those two guys in the league is the Celtics with those two perimeter defenders. And look, Donovan had a great game, but Darius Garland had a fairly pedestrian game. And it's
had a fairly pedestrian playoffs.
Well, it's also a lot to ask for him to go up against Derek White and Jrue Holiday and put up 30 and 10. But like those two guys both have to be awesome for these guys to have a realistic chance to win. And, you know, tonight was fairly indicative of that, where the Celtics had a mediocre performance and kind of eased their way to a 25-point win.
Cavs 3 of 12 against Jrue Holiday as a primary defender. That is difficult. All right, we're going to pivot off that game. Fortunately, Bontemps, you're not pivoting off that series.
No, I'm not.
The Celtics have really made Bontemps and I stay away from home a lot longer over the last several years. And I can see it now. Game 4, it's going to be a sweep. And those Cavs finally have that breakout 3-point. Yep. Yeah, I'm telling you, this is a Lopez.
This series is 1,000% going 5.
This is a guarantee. The Cavs will be down 3-0, and then they will shoot 66% on threes. They'll be raining in threes from half court as Bontemps books his flight back to Boston, courtside. Sorry.
It will be happening.
All right. So I think we should talk about the two games that we saw on Monday night because
those were a little different than these two.
Yeah. So they were so wild that they were basically the biggest stories of the day on Tuesday, despite there being two other games. The big news out of Denver was that Jamal Murray avoided a suspension despite heaving a heating pad.
Two objects.
First, well, you know, here's the thing. He threw some stuff on the court. He got fined $100,000. The reason
He threw a towel at Mark, just so people know, because they didn't see for some reason. He threw a towel in the direction of Mark Davis. And then while he's sitting on the end of the bench, to be clear. And then after, I guess, not getting his message across in his mind, maybe he didn't. I don't know if Mark Davis even noticed. Then he launches a heating pad up in the air and it lands on the court in the middle of play as the game is going on, Mark Davis,
like, who was standing right there. To me, there's two charges. One is throwing something at a referee, which I thought was a red line. And, you know,
I thought so too.
And secondly, now I don't even know if most people know what these heating pads are. It's not like what you do, you know, with your mom and you plug in the electric and you put it over your knee. This is, would you agree, guys, this is the most antiquated thing in the NBA, the heating pads that they use?
It's up there. It's on the short list for sure.
I would, yeah, because I mean, and it's funny because some guys have some teams, some guys have gone away from the older heating pads and they'd use the Hyper Ice and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, it is one of the more antiquated things.
Okay, so there's the, you'll see it. You can see it on every NBA bench. There's this stainless steel canister and
boiling hot water
with it's, I guess there are, they, is it in water? Or is it just steam? There's steam.
I'm honestly not sure. I haven't opened it and looked at it.
I don't want to open it. It's nasty. And they basically, you know, have these pads that are like ridged, and when players come off, they wrap their legs or their lower back in towels in these things, and you stay warm on the bench. I'm sure it's actually kind of nice, although I'm not sure if you want it when it's 90 degrees outside. But he heaved it, and first off, those are wet. Second off, they're slippery, and if you step on it, you could screw yourself up. So I mean, just the only thing I could compare this to, I said it was unprecedented, but the only thing I could compare this to, do you remember last season in Miami when Dwayne Dedman was upset about being benched?
He ended up grabbing the massage gun. Hyper Ice, the massage gun.
He heaved that.
I was told by Hyper Ice it was not their company; it was somebody else's. But it was the same. Well, it was the same deal.
I am here to say that I personally endorse Hyper Ice. I would endorse no other product. I endorse Hyper Ice. Okay.
I am with you.
The Bontemps household has one also that is used.
Shout out to founder and CEO Anthony Katz. Good man. Hyper Ice.
See, I can't do that. Can you do that, Tim? Can you shout out CEOs like that?
Are you kidding? No.
The Brian thing.
There's only one person doing that on this pod. It ain't me and it ain't you.
Anyway, onto the court goes the massager. When that happened, Dwayne Dedman was ejected from the game. Mm-hmm. Now, in this case, I don't blame the officials because they literally had their back turned. They had no idea who threw it. I suppose they could have gone over and looked at video, but the game's going on. So had they seen it, now, Mark Davis in the pool report after the game said he would have given him a technical. I suspect that had he actually seen what happened, they would have ejected him.
I think the NBA made sure that in the pool report, they had the flexibility to decide whatever they were going to do for a punishment right afterward. And by saying that, they gave a lot of wiggle room to interpret what happened later.
Well, in the instance of Dedman, I went and looked up what happened. Dedman was indeed suspended. However, he was not suspended by the NBA.
Right. The Heat suspended him because he basically went at Eric Spoelstra.
Yeah, he wasn't throwing it at the referee. He was throwing it at Spoelstra. Actually, he wasn't throwing it at anybody.
He smashed the table and it went flying out of the court.
Right. It was less egregious. It was actually more dangerous because those things are bigger and heavier, but less egregious. So
Premeditated, where in this case, I mean, that was my issue with this, with Jamal. It's like, because look, this is a lot like the Joel Embiid Mitchell Robinson play in game 3 of the first round. It's not obviously that's a different thing because they're on the court. But if Jamal Murray had been suspended for game 3, I would not have sat here and said, this is some travesty of justice that Jamal Murray is not playing in a playoff game, because he did one of the most stupid things I've ever seen somebody do. Like, I don't care how mad you are at the ref, like to sit on the bench. Because again, it's like a premeditated thing. He's sitting on the bench, having a pout, and he's like, oh, I'm mad at Mark Davis, so I'm going to throw stuff at him. Like, what are we doing here? Like, this is just ridiculous behavior.
Childish, like, completely childish.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous thing to do.
In fact, if my six-year-old did that, there would have been consequences. Leave it at that.
Well, it's just ridiculous behavior. So, I mean, certainly $100,000 fine is no joke. That's a massive fine. So, you know, it's probably a reasonable middle ground, because the best outcome would have been they see him doing this in a game they're getting annihilated in. They throw him out of the game and they make their point and it's all over with. But obviously that didn't happen. So then they got to figure out what to do.
The reason he was mad was not because I think he was upset because he had been run over and there was no charge called and he was still upset about that. But the reason he was upset wasn't just the calls. He was upset because he was getting destroyed personally. He was having a miserable game because,
and frankly, outside of two shots, has had a miserable playoffs.
By his standards, yeah. And he was 3 of 18 in this game. And the Wolves have completely targeted, generally to pressure the Nuggets guards, but particularly him, because they know that he's dealing with this calf issue. And I think our tracking, or actually I think it was Second Spectrum tracking, over 50 times, 5-0 in this game, they pressured Nuggets guards in, or ball handlers in the backcourt. They were basically playing three-quarter court, full press. And by the way, they were pressing everybody. They were up on everybody.
Yeah, we talked about it the other day with them doing it to Jokic too. I mean, they're making life uncomfortable for the Nuggets at every step they take on the court.
What happened in this game, and I thought it's incredible coaching, incredible leadership by their players, incredible will. They knew that Denver was going to come out and try to get him, you know, hit him with the heavy hand at home. Well, Rudy Gobert is out because he leaves for the birth of his son. What a week for Rudy Gobert. Becomes a father on Monday. Tuesday, wins his 4th Defensive Player of the Year award, which we know how proud and how important that is for Rudy. It's not more important than his son. It's not more important than trying to win a championship. But Bontemps, you know, Rudy,
I know
that this is really
very big deal for him. And it should be. It's a huge accomplishment.
Yeah. So, but Rudy can't make it back. Rudy has to fly. I don't know where he went. I assume he went to Minnesota.
I believe he's in Minnesota.
His girlfriend.
And by the way, teams in the spot that Denver was in, because I admit Stats Williams looked this up, down 0-1 at home, best of 7 series. They had won 80% of the time. They were 121-29. Now they're 121-30. The average margin of victory for those 121 teams is 13.7 points. It's like we talked about on the Monday pod. Teams typically blow out the opponent in this game. And if Denver had won a close game, that would have, I think, been real cause for concern. And instead, it was not only not a close win, it was not a close loss. They got the brakes beat off them almost instantly to an unbelievable degree in this game.
80 points they scored. The best defensive performance this season from Minnesota. Absolutely smothering is the correct term, I think, because they no space. So they come out there without Gobert and respond to that challenge by playing their absolute best.
It was awesome.
And just look, it is, you have to win 16 games to win the title. This was their 6th. So making an assumption about this series, much less anything past that, I think is not prudent. And certainly for an organization that has reached the past the second round once ever, certainly
they've
be
won
careful.
3
there.
Playoff series ever.
Right.
The first round sweep was their third playoff series win of all time.
Right. First ever sweep. So yeah, I'm not ready to just admit to this way it's going to go, but obviously they're in supremely strong position. I will say this, Bontemps, when we've talked about the Timberwolves' chances all season long, we have recognized their awesome defense. We've always said, look, can they score enough? They were red hot shooting the ball in Denver. It was because they generated shots, and because Ant Edwards made shots when guys were draped all over him and was just relentless attacking the basket. And, you know, they definitely were rewarded by the referees for having the aggression. But they shot over 50% in both those games. Maybe they will keep shooting over 50%, but I will just say that it is unlike them. This defense is like them. It is unlike them to be this powerful offensively. So
yes. Well, they could have some games where they don't shoot the ball well. But I also think it's worth pointing out that there probably is not a single team in the league that has more benefited from the way the game has shifted over the past 3 months than the Minnesota Timberwolves. A team that struggles to score at times and plays incredible defense and has all these big, long, physical players, and they are playing a team in the Denver Nuggets who like to play a more finesse style. Nikola Jokic is obviously a big, bruising guy, but they like to do back cuts. They like to, you know, they're moving the ball all around. They're flying around. They're getting teams moved all over the place. Like, they're not that – they want to get into their actions and move players around and move stuff around and do things. And – the Timberwolves are more or less playing like the Seahawks Legion of Boom defense and just beating everybody up all the time. And because the game has shifted to such a degree, they're being allowed to do it in a way they would not have been three or four months ago.
That is an absolutely spectacular point. Even by your standards, that is a spectacular point. This change at midseason falls right into the Timberwolves' laps.
And by the way, you know who else it helps out? The New York Knicks, who are also.
I was going to tell you the playoffs. Oklahoma City Thunder, because Lou Dort gets to do what Lou Dort wants.
Well, yeah, again,
and that was a beauty to watch.
I mean, he put Brandon Ingram in the torture chamber. I think is what
torture
they call
chamber,
it.
Baby.
I mean, he.
You think
him.
Ingram is emerged from there yet, Lopez? You think he's still recovering?
Look, he. Like Luka, he was battling something going in, but whatever Lou Dort did to him did not help. I promise you that. It was a very tough four games for Brandon, especially with Nosey on the court. Not a lot of help. And it was I was kind of amazed at how physical they did allow Lou Dort to be. But as Bontemps pointed out, that has been the shift in the NBA. I saw that with the Thunder. I saw that with Minnesota. You saw it with the Knicks. This has benefited teams and allowed them to be more physical, and they have certainly just played right into it.
All right. Well, let's pivot to the Knicks.
Well, one thing really quick that I just wanted to point out really fast about this series, because I was talking to somebody about this earlier today. This is not to, I'm going to say this before I say anything else. This is not to denigrate the run that the Denver Nuggets had last year to the championship, because they went 16-5 in the playoffs. They pounded every opponent they got and they won. However, they played four teams in the playoffs that by record would not have qualified for the playoffs this year. So to say that they didn't exactly have the strongest run in terms of opponents is worth pointing out a little bit. And the league is, I think, much deeper across the board this year. And we talked a lot in the first round about how the Lakers got out into leads in these games. And does that mean the Lakers are maybe closer to where they would like to be than we thought? Maybe it was that Denver was a little bit closer to the field than we thought.
That is a reasonable point, but Denver was awesome last year.
No, I agree. They curb stomped their opponents. So I'm not, it's not like they went through and
another
beat everybody handily.
Another stat that popped up on Tuesday after the Nuggets are shaky for the first time in 18 months is that they've never beat a team in a series that had 50. This group has never beat a team in a series that had 50 wins. And I immediately threw a flag on that, because you're looking back at 2020, 2021.
Well, there's been all these shortened season years, yes. Of course. Yes.
And the Lakers and Heat at the end of last season were playing like 50 win teams.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
for sure.
I guess that stat, I guess, holds. It's one of those things that's accurate, but not true.
Well, and the other thing is too, like we've talked about a bunch, the Nuggets bench has been a weakness for a while now. And if their starters are not going to be able to compete with Minnesota starters, their bench certainly is going to compete with Minnesota's bench. So, I mean, the bottom line is Jamal Murray's got to be better. Nikola Jokic has got to be better. Their starters have to be better. If they're not, this series is going to be over really fast.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. All right, the Knicks. We're going to start off with today's Reliable Connection brought to you by Xfinity, because the Reliable Connection was once again the Villanova gentleman.
It's just going to be that we're just going to have to start calling
What do you want me to
say? Connection.
Because Jalen Brunson had 43, Dante DiVincenzo had 25, including the game-winning basket, which he made on a three, on a frozen rope pass that Jalen Brunson threw him with 40 seconds left, which was mildly controversial.
Comcast, then, by the way, located headquarters in Philadelphia, where Villanova is. So
I'm sure
playing right into the Xfinity deal.
And then Josh Hart, who played for all 48 and no end in sight because the Knicks are losing players by the day. Josh Hart with 24 points and 13 rebounds and the unending adoration of the Garden. Okay, in the last minute of this game, despite really the story kind of being Jalen Brunson having 21 points in the fourth quarter and Tyrese Halliburton really just not being able to affect the game at all, which we'll talk about in a minute. At the end of this game, the last 2 minute report was a rough one today. Yet again, involving the Knicks.
Third straight MSG game with an insane 2 minute report.
Yeah. So look, you probably know now there's two very controversial calls, and it actually was more than that. In the last minute, the NBA admits that with about 42 seconds left is where things start going way sideways. First off, Dante DiVincenzo sets a screen on Aaron Nesmith in which he moves on the screen and holds. It's not called, and nobody threw a flag and say it was not called because that's what happens in that part of the game. The league later says that should have been called a moving screen. Nesmith, by the way, gets through the screen and brings double team pressure on Jalen Brunson, who throws a terrible pass. Jalen Brunson had almost no mistakes in the end of this game. This was one of them. He threw a terrible bounce pass that Aaron Nesmith got a steal on, hit it with his hand. The game is tied at this point with 40 seconds left. And the Pacers collect the ball and are taking off on a 3-on-1 break. Now, in my view, this missed call, which the referees called as a kicked ball, was the biggest egregious thing in the game. Because
No question about it.
Because Jalen Brunson may take a take foul there. At the very least, it's going to be a dunk at the other end, maybe a foul. It would have been a 2-point game. It was going to be timeout Knicks. Let's regroup. Instead,
right. To be clear for people in case they didn't see, the score is tied at this moment as the steal is happening.
Yes. They come out of the, by the way, they can't review it. The Pacers had a review on a time or a challenge in a timeout. They can't review it. It's not a reviewable play.
You're not allowed to review that.
They bring the ball in. The double team comes on Brunson. Perfect spacing
Nesmith had a really crappy double team.
And yes.
It was not good in any way. And they left Dante DiVincenzo wide open.
And Halliburton had a sluggish closeout and DiVincenzo hits like a 24 footer.
Right.
And basically that gives them the leverage for the rest of the game. Then there's some other craziness, including another blown call where the ball was going to be given to the Pacers. Thibodeau uses his challenge, bails out the referees there because quite frankly, if Thibodeau doesn't have a challenge where their ball is clearly out off of,
Nemhart's foot.
I think it was Nesmith, but
maybe it was Nemhart's. It was okay. Nemhart's foot.
Then that would have been another big controversy. But the Pacers lose on that one. I mean, the correct call was eventually made, but Tibbs luckily had a challenge left, so he bailed the officials out on that. Then with 12 seconds left, the Pacers are down by one.
After Jalen Brunson turns the ball over on the inbounds, trying to throw it off Tyrese Halliburton, has to come back and bounces off of him while he's staying out of bounds. Then the Pacers get the ball.
At least the refs got that call right.
They did.
That call they
right
got
away.
Right.
Yes.
So it was a huge play, big moment for the Pacers. They got a chance to hold for the last shot and go for the win. They come down, run a standard high pick and roll with Miles Turner and Halliburton. Turner is really giving the Knicks trouble at this point. He's leading the league. He's leading the game in scoring for the Pacers. The Knicks big men are not playing up on him. He is getting space. He is about to peel off of this pick and roll and be wide open on a pick and pop. And especially wide open because when he leans in and gives the screen to DiVincenzo, is it fair to say he flopped? I know people
I don't know what Lopez thinks. I think it's fair to say he flopped.
He's not far from Broadway. He was just doing a little acting.
If they don't call that, DiVincenzo is going to be laying on the ground. One of the best assist man in the league is going to have the ball in Halliburton. And Miles Turner is going to be setting up for a 3-pointer with 10 seconds left. Or maybe Halliburton drives. I don't think he would drive because he went to
the Pacers are going to get a wide open shot.
Yeah. They call a moving screen. The league upheld it. Obviously, the Pacers were challenged. It was upheld.
It was technically
the
correct call by a marginal amount. It was not the right thing to call in the moment.
Clearly.
On any level.
Clearly. So, and you know what's, by the way, there was another missed call involving Turner and DiVincenzo after this that I didn't realize until I read the last 2 minute report. After, with the Pacers having turned the ball over, they foul and there's a away from the play foul. Nembhard makes a mental mistake and it becomes a 4-point game. The game's basically over, but with like 8 seconds left, with this being a 4-point game, it's over. Miles Turner levels DiVincenzo. Yes.
Miles Turner got his money's worth on an actual moving screen when the game was irrelevant that they let him get away with.
Totally didn't see that. Nobody mentioned it after the game that I heard about. That was on the this 2 minute
report. Well, nobody mentioned it because it didn't matter at that point.
Well, it mattered to Dante DiVincenzo.
Dante DiVincenzo will do the swap on that one.
So anyway, this was a mess. It marred the ending that Brunson had, his fourth straight 40-point game in the playoffs. And by the way, the fifth game in that run, he had 39. So Bontemps and I are in the post-game press conference, and Rick Carlisle took a little bit extra time to come in. And what he was doing was watching the end of the game again. And I wondered what he was going to do. I wondered what he was going to make an issue of, because he was clearly within his rights. I mean, unlike that series, well, I guess the 76ers ultimately had grounds to be upset. But unlike the 76ers, who are, you know, hiring lawyers, you know, in the post game of game two last round, Rick decides to come in and take the high road and not complain about the officiating.
I thought it was smart because he's got a young team. He's in a hostile environment. And I think the important thing for them is to try to keep their heads about him. I thought him and Miles Turner both set a good tone from that regard. Yeah. But look, I mean, it's a huge problem for the league that all we've talked about during the playoffs is the inconsistency with the officiating. And I don't know what you think, Lopez. We haven't covered a game together yet in these playoffs, but every time they go to Secaucus, I have no idea what they're coming back with. The reviews, there's wild decisions on these challenges all over the place. Tom Thibodeau called this challenge his play on Jalen Brunson. Everybody in the building thought it was an insane challenge. He wins the challenge somehow. I mean, it's like this every time they do it. And by the way, I'm also going to say something else. And I don't know how people at the Olympic Tower and other places will like it, but a couple of years ago, there was this, I'm in Boston, there was this call in Boston where LeBron drove to the basket and didn't get a foul call. Jason Goble didn't call, very obvious foul. And the Celtics
Pat
win
Bev
the game.
Was on the, Pat Bev was on the scene.
Pat Bev was on the scene. And I think when the referees did this completely insane decision to send this tweet afterward, saying how they're sleepless nights about this mistake on this LeBron call, I think that permanently damaged the credibility of the referees with a decent segment of the population. Because by doing that, like, look, Jason Goble made a mistake on that call. Like, that, you make mistakes on calls. It happens. Sean Wright made a mistake on this kickball call. Like, it sucks it happened. I'm sure he felt crappy about it. Like, no one wants to, the refs don't want to do that. Like, it happens, though, just like players miss shots or whatever. But by turning it into this thing where we're going to make it like it's, you know, oh, we've wronged LeBron James, we have to like bow down and apologize, it reinforces all of these negative stereotypes that already exist, that the league is in the pocket for the Knicks and in the pocket for the Lakers and in the pocket for the other big market teams. And the fact that this continues to happen at Madison Square Garden, when the first time the Knicks have had a team like this in forever, it's not a great look for the league, even though there is no grand conspiracy here, I can assure you, but it doesn't matter to people. They look at it and it's, they're playing Indiana. These calls happen. The Knicks escape with this win. And then the league puts out this ridiculous last 2 minute report that does nothing but annoy everybody the next day. And it's just, the whole thing has just become a complete mess.
I will say on the reviews, it still does not make sense to me that the referee who was making the call is the one trying to go to the monitor and then look at, like, just let the other two officials go look at it. Like, let the other two officials into caucus make the call, take some sort of bias out of this, or even having your discussion into it. I was in Oklahoma City when there was another one of these calls where, as Bontemps, I was texting you, we thought Dagnall found a loophole in the challenge system, which he did 3 months ago, because it worked in his favor, where if you know, the referees can't decide, they call a jump ball. It has to be, when you go to the monitor, it has to be something that they have to look at. But I don't know. To me, it just small tweaks need to be had with this challenge system, but it has not helped that it has been so high profile in the, you know, first round in a game or two.
All right. So two things that happened today. One, Mitchell Robinson is now going to be out for the playoffs because he re-injured his left ankle. The ankle that he had surgery on in December, he missed 50 games, was coming back, had some impactful games in the postseason. One of the things the Knicks do super duper well is offensive rebound, number one during the regular season. They've been great in the postseason. Mitchell plays a huge part in that, in generally on defense. Re-injured the ankle. And the Knicks are now out three rotation players because Julius Randle, who's been out for a long time, but still they don't have him. And Bojan Bogdanović has had surgery on his wrist in the last after the last round. He's out. And so now, I mean, Tibbs only playing six and a, you know, seven and a half guys anyway. And now they're down, you know, two forwards and a big man. So he'll be playing seven, I assume. Precious Achiuwa, who'd played pretty well in relief of Mitch. So he's out. That was a setback for the Knicks today. And the thing about this series that is key going forward is to me is Tyrese Haliburton. Tyrese took six shots total in game one. Only one of them was inside the three-point arc. Over the last seven games, he's averaging 10 threes a game, which is three more than he did in the regular season. And he's got seven free throws in seven games, seven playoff games. He's playing his first playoff game, his first playoffs ever. He is on the injury report every day, the last couple of days, with back spasms, which he has dealt with back injuries on and off back to his high school years. I don't exactly know where this ranks for him. They're not elaborating on it. What Rick Carlisle said today was that, you know, it's a concern. It's something he's dealing with and it's a concern, but he's playing. He's available and he's playing. When I talked to Tyrese today at practice, he talked to the media for 7 minutes. I counted. He said he would be better in game two 13 times. I will be better. 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 He said this over and over and over. The question is, can he be better with where he is at physically? The big concern that I would have, Bontemps, about watching him play isn't so much that he needs, I mean, he's not going to outscore Jalen Brunson. But he was passing up opportunities. He had several times where I saw him with an opportunity to drive or even shoot, and he just didn't want it. And that can't continue. And look, I mean, he has not quite been the same player since that hamstring injury. I understand.
He's been a lot
that.
Less than not quite the same guy. He's been way worse. Mm-hmm.
But he's got to shoot if he's open. He's got to drive if he's open. He's on the court. So this is Tyrese, for a lot of his career, very well known now, felt like he was overlooked. He's not overlooked anymore. He's an all-star. He made Team USA over some guys like Jalen Brunson and Kyrie Irving. If he's not 100%, I don't expect him to score 40, but they need something more from him. And if they don't get it, I'm not sure the Pacers have the talent to, even with the Knicks playing with the short bench, I'm not sure they've got it, even though the depth of the Pacers is huge. They went 46-3 in bench points. I'm not sure, Bontemps, whether they have enough without Tyrese getting better.
No, they obviously don't have enough. I mean, this is another example of you not wanting to like make some sort of prediction, but yeah, they obviously don't have enough if Tyrese isn't playing better than he did in that game. Like, look, the Pacers were in that game because they got an incredible game from TJ McConnell, an incredible game from Obi Toppin, an incredible game from Isaiah Jackson, right? You can't expect to get those kind of games from your bench players every game. They need Tyrese to be really good. He's got to be playing Jalen Brunson to a draw. He's got to be that kind of guy for them to win this series. Like, they were able to wheeze past Milwaukee missing two guys and with Chris Middleton banged up because those guys were out and Chris Middleton was banged up and they only had so much firepower ultimately. But they're not beating this Knicks team with Jalen Brunson going the way he is and they have no way to stop him on defense. Like, they need Tyrese Haliburton to be Tyrese Haliburton. If he's nowhere near that, which he was in game one, like, yeah, they're not going to be able to win this series. And that was the game, I think, that they needed to win to make this a really long series.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the one with all these supporting players, you got to get that win. And they let it get away, and I think it's going to be hard for them now.
You're right. They shot over 50% from the field. They scored 117 points on the Knicks in the Garden. I don't know how often they're going to do that. One thing I will say is I think Brunson's going to keep scoring because I don't think the matchup that the Pacers have for him. Nembhard, Brunson enjoyed playing against Nembhard because Nembhard's the shortest guy he's been playing against in a while. And he was just shooting over him at times. And he's able to get in the lane, even against Nesmith, who's bigger, but he's in to get in the lane. I think really the Pacers are just like, if he gets 40, he's going to get 40. We can't let him get 40 on 26 shots because he got 14 free throws, and they can't let DiVincenzo and Hart combine for 50, which they did. Well, game two of that one's on Wednesday night. Okay, Lopez, you had a great opportunity to sit down with the rookie of the year, Victor Wembanyama, on Monday as he did his sort of last act before heading overseas for the summer. Mm-hmm. What was the conversation like, and what was the mood like with Victor claiming this award, which is... So it's almost unfair that the Chet didn't get more attention because of how great his season was. Chet had an excellent game tonight, by the way.
Chet would have been rookie of the year most years.
Yeah.
Most years. I've told somebody this before. I was like, it felt like Chet might have had a top 10 rookie season in the last 25 years. It just happened to come against
higher than that.
Victor.
Maybe top 20, maybe top 10 over the last 25 years, but I mean, he had an incredible year, but Victor, you saw it second half of the year. He in particular, he was insane.
And for Victor, honestly, I think the biggest thing for him was seeing if he was going to be unanimous. I think he knew at this point. I think that was part of it. But he did say, I asked him, I was like, how much did that mean to you? And he said, it does make it a bigger achievement that he was unanimous. He really, I think, kind of took a little bit of pride in that. And he's talked about this several times this year about how much he wants to have individual awards, not so much in a selfish manner, but he knows that if I'm winning defensive player of the year, or as Brian said earlier, MVPs, that
must skip ahead to unanimous MVPs.
That must mean that team success is coming along with it. And one thing I did ask him, did you get a chance to go into the Spurs new facility?
I haven't yet. No.
Okay. In the Spurs new facility, there are 8 giant windows on the one side. And 5 of those are where the banners sit, the 5 NBA championships that the Spurs have won. They did not center these. It is, the banners start at the left. So it is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And there are 3 open windows. And Victor said, I asked him, I was like, do you think about putting more up there? And he's like, it's one of the first things I noticed when I walked in here. He goes, and we may need more space. Because he is a supremely confident kid. You got to see that last summer.
Oh yeah.
We've seen that. In the time that we've spent with him, he was, I think, very appreciative of everything that was kind of thrown his way this year. But he knows that more individual awards in the future will mean more team success. And I think that is kind of where he's at right now. But I will say he said it made for a bigger achievement knowing that he was, received all 99 votes. I don't know where the 100th is, but it was all 99 votes going to him for first place.
Finished second in the defensive player of the year.
Defensive player of the year. 19 first place votes.
19 first place votes. I did vote for Rudy, but I really thought hard about voting for Victor. But I respected Rudy, and I feel good about the vote. But what were some of the other things that he told you about this for his rookie season?
Well, we talked again about the not skipping steps. Obviously, we remember the. Everybody tells me not to skip steps, but I always ran up the stairs comment from the All-Star game. But he really talked about how one of the things that he wants to work on for the summer, and before we, he has a big summer coming up. I'll get to that in a second. But one of the things he talked about was getting his balance down, which you see him work on this all the time. And he works on the flexibility of his ankles and all this kind of stuff. And he talked about how he didn't want to use the word surprise, but how much his body was able to recover playing 71 games. I don't think he thought that maybe his body was going to feel the same after the season the way it did, but we see the upkeep, we see what he does, we see the stretches that he does, all of these different things. But now he gets to turn his focus to the Olympics and playing for France, and he understands Look, this was a guy who wanted to play in the Olympics. In his mind, he thought he was good enough to do it when he was 12 years old. He wanted to play in the 2016 Olympics. You know, he wanted to be on the team 3 years ago in Tokyo. And now he has this opportunity and to do it in his home country. I did ask him about going up against Team USA again. He did not take the bait on that question. He was very diplomatic about that. But I think he is very excited about the opportunity that lies ahead of him this summer, being able to represent France.
Yeah, I mean, that tournament's going to be something special, although I'm, you know, I'm now getting worried about whether Luca's knee is going to, how that's going to affect him for that one. But
well, we'll see. Long way to go.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a, you know, it's a huge, talk about a week for the French.
Yeah.
The French just took back-to-back awards.
And they might take the number one pick in the draft.
And we're 1-2 in Defensive Player of the Year, too.
Right.
Lopez, I'm curious. For you, we have talked a lot on the pod, the two of us and the other goofball, about the situation the Spurs are in and the interesting summer they have ahead of them and the various options they have at their disposal, whether they speed things up, whether they stay where they're at, whether they maybe try to get Cooper Flagg or somebody next year. Like, they obviously can go a lot of different ways, right? You spent all year around Victor, and you obviously just had this interview with him. What do you think he wants right now in this summer, and how much of that is playing into whatever it is that the Spurs, do you think, are going to do over the next few months to improve the team?
Well, he's made it clear he wants to win. And I will preface this with saying he also understands the process. And I think, you know, if you were looking at this from a purely a team building standpoint, you would think, okay, maybe let's be bad one more year because of what's at the top of the 25 draft.
Mm-hmm.
It's a much better class than what you're about to go into. I mean, even if you somehow win the number one pick on Sunday, on the Sunday NBA draft lottery.
By the way, we have not mentioned that one time. It is 5 days away. We have not mentioned it one time. The lottery is on Sunday. I was talking to a scout today and he's like, I don't know. He goes, if you get a top three pick in this lottery, it may be kind of like a loss because then you got to pay some of these guys, you know, that kind of salary. I was like, Jesus, sorry. The lottery is on Sunday.
It's not on Tuesday. It is on Sunday. NBA is doing that. Even if you get, like you just kind of pointed out, one of those top three picks, they're not as sure things as scouts and everyone thinks they will be as the 25 class is. When you mentioned Cooper Flagg, and there's a bunch of other guys. That would probably go number one this year. So maybe even if the Spurs get 1, 2, 3 or whatever they do, I don't know if Victor's going to allow them to be in the conversation for one of those top guys in 25 just because of how he is going to be. Not because he's going to make demands or want to do anything. Not because of that. But, I mean, we saw what kind of guy he was at the end of the season after the All-Star break. The numbers They did still lose a lot of games.
They still don't have a lot around them.
They went 3-2 in their first five games of the season. They went 7-11 in their final 7-4 in their final 11 games. So they were 11-7 or 11-6 in those games, and then 11-54 in between. There was a lot of bad basketball played in between this year that start and finish. There is some optimism around how they finished. I don't think that means run it back optimism, but
right.
If they made a splash this summer, it wouldn't surprise me. But I don't think it's going to be all right, let's go from 22 to 44 or anything like that, or be, you know, maybe they flirt with being in the play-in next year. They try to take the steps, but I think you see a different Victor, a guy who is going challenge for Defensive Player of the Year.
Well, if they're flirting with the play-in, they're not really in. I mean, you could maybe jump up in the lottery, but that's like, you're probably not really flirting with the lottery. You're probably going to finish 10th in the draft then.
Who knows what, I mean, obviously the record's on the other side. I mean, you're probably, I mean, you're looking at the West next year. How many teams are trying to win games in the West next year?
Almost all of them, except,
I mean, you could maybe
Portland.
Except maybe one.
Portland's probably trying, but they're just going right. to fail to.
So
will Utah be trying?
Utah again. But it's one of those things. I think they could make a smaller splash. I don't think it's a let's cash in and go get a big name type of summer.
So the bottom line is, you don't think, as you very artfully danced around my question for a while.
Yes. I do not think they're going to go in all in, but I think they make smaller splashes.
They'll improve the roster without dramatically upgrading, would be your guess, if you had to guess as of May 8th as to what they do.
Because you would still have now, obviously this summer, I think, I don't remember when Devontae Graham's contract guarantees for 12.8, but that's a salary.
I'll tell you right now while you're talking.
Zach Collins has
nothing. Apropos of nothing, today Trae Young announced he'd switched representation agencies.
It's amazing. It's just drop that in there just like that.
A little note just from the bottom of my notebook here.
Zach Collins is making 17. Devontae's making 12. You have numbers to move if you are the Spurs.
His money guarantees on July 1st, by the way.
There we go. So you can go pre-draft if you want to look at something like that, if you're going to make a move there by sending him out, guaranteeing his money or sending him out. So there are movable numbers. I know they like a lot of the pieces that they have. Roles shifted. Obviously, Jeremy Sochan, look at what he does. They want to see more. I think definitely moving forward with the Vassell-Victor pairing, there was a lot more two-man game with those two toward the end of the year, a lot more pick and roll. They started to find each other, but could see them making a smaller move more than a go all the way in. But, you know, things can change in the next month.
Well, it will be enjoyable to watch, and you're our man in San Antonio. So I feel
howdy,
like...
Howdy, I think. Is that... Yeah. Yeah, I feel weird saying that. I'll leave it to the other guy.
I'm not going to lie; it didn't sound right.
Good. I don't want it to sound right.
All right. I wonder if McMahon's done working. McMahon's probably at the bar.
Right? No, he's definitely not done working. He's the slowest. He's one of the slowest people on our staff working. He's all definitely right. Sitting there crafting some beautiful story out of that game.
All right. Well, we're done working. Bontemps, I think, got up at 4 a.m. to fly to Boston this morning. So we're going to parole him. We're going to parole Lopez. We're going to let Jackson go to work. Thank you for listening and watching the Hoop Collective podcast presented by Xfinity. And we will talk to you later this week.
See y'all later.